Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
And let's take a... wow, we have a guest on the big screen behind us. Let's hear from her.
Hi, Harry.
Hi.
I'm talking to the members of your studio audience.
Yeah, I know, and we so rarely have one.
I know. So, folks, will you just look under your seats now, please?
Wow. What is it?
There's some spiders, some old cheeseburgers, and Michelle Norris's new book.
Wow, this really must be public radio. Hello, welcome to the show. Thank you, folks. Don't forget to give back those copies of Michelle Norris's book after you read them, because the Car Talk guys need to give them away. From a mile high, think of it, in Southern California, more to the point, from Idlewild, California, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
An attempt to lighten up the heavy subject of stem cells through poetry has backfired on the California agency that manages the state's $3 billion research fund. The California Institute for Regenerative Medicine decided to hold a poetry contest to celebrate Stem Cell Awareness Day last week, but it later pulled the winning entries from its website because religious language is in one of the works. The poem, stem C, begins, "This is my body, which is given for you," and ends with, "Take this in remembrance of me." That's language used during the Holy Communion in many Christian churches. The conservative California Family Council called the poem blasphemous. The state agency apologized in a statement for any offense the poem may have caused. Stay away from government poetry, won't you? Dateline Salt Lake City, a member of the San Diego State football broadcast team, this is the first of our football apologies this week, is apologizing for a hateful rant he made against BYU, Brigham Young University, his talk show. Colorado's Chris Elio is only an early afternoon host on radio station XTRA in San Diego, said Thursday afternoon that BYU has no honor, is 100% hypocritical, and that BYU players spout racial slurs at opposing players. He made the remarks after learning a BYU employee was allowed to work in the replay booth and that a blown call was not overturned after being reviewed during last Saturday's games. BYU won 24-21. Elio acknowledged BYU played harder and probably would have won anyway, but said he was so incredibly angry. He told KSL News Radio this week he owed an apology to a lot of people in Provo for the things I said or in the way they were said. He further apologized on the radio show. A lot of what I said on my radio show was kind of drawn from emotion and a lot of frustration, emotion I think I feel a lot of San Diego State people feel. That said, anytime you let emotion into it, I think you say a lot of things that can go offline, go off course. I think a lot of my emotional comments went so far off the course, they kind of missed the target I was intending. Duff Tittle, BYU Associate Athletic Director of Communications, declined comment. I went so far deep into that story just to be able to say the name Duff Tittle. An incident involving Cincinnati Bengals cornerback Adam Jones, in which he was questioned and handcuffed, was a case of mistaken identity. That's what a Cincinnati police spokesperson confirmed to NFL Network. Jones was detained by police after a traffic incident following a Bengals loss, but he was released a short time later without a ticket or charges. The police department said it was entirely at fault for the incident. The department has apologized to Jones. Cincinnati Police Chief Tom Stryker said at a news conference, the police department made a mistake and Jones did nothing wrong. The chief called the episode unfortunate. David Arquette had a little soul-bearing session with Howard Stern. Know the feeling, babe. We've been on a trial separation for a while now, Arquette said of his now on the rocks marriage to Courtney Cox. He, among the comments he made were comments about how long it's been since he had sex with his wife. The next day, Arquette took to his Twitter account to explain, "Thank you all for your love, capital L, and support at this time. I'm trying, figuring out how to be the best person I can be," he said to his 22,000 followers. "Hey, I just hit 16,000. But it's been a process of trial and error. While on Howard Stern, I share too much. It's all right for me to be honest. But in retrospect, some of the information I provided involved others, and for that, I am sorry and humbled. Life is a process of spiritual evolution," he explained. And, of course, the Howard Stern program is the place to spiritually evolve. Quarterback Brett Favre apologized to Vikings teammates this week about his scandal of sending inappropriate text messages to a female Jets employee. An anonymous source told the Associated Press that Favre spoke to his teammates before the game against the Jets and offered an apology for being a distraction. This evolves from a report in Deadspin, a sports website in which a former Jets employee accused Favre of sending unwanted text message photos of his private parts. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell said the league is looking into the facts, if not the photos. If Favre is found guilty, he could be fined or just given a better camera. Favre has not publicly commented on the allegations, except when he said, "I'm not getting into that." The National Republican Senatorial Committee fired one of its ad vendors this week after reports emerged linking the firm to that controversial casting call in which it asked for Hickey actors to play to portray West Virginians upset with incumbent Governor Joe Manchin, who's a Democrat. Originally, the committee denied any connection to the casting call, saying their vendor, Jamestown Associates, had sent a benign email to a separate agency looking for actors. Is that enough separation? No. That agency was to blame for the offending language, having asked for actors in Philly to fit the pejorative descriptions. But on Thursday, the defense unraveled. Politico's Mike Allen reported that it was, in fact, Jamestown Associates that wrote the casting call. Minutes later, the National Republican Committee put out a statement proclaiming it had been lied to by the firm and announcing they were severing ties with the group. Because we did not know the truth, we've made incorrect statements over the past 8 days, and we regret doing so, said the committee. The NRSC unequivocally denounces the offensive language Jamestown Associates used in producing this ad. We apologize to any West Virginia voter who may have been offended by this firm's actions, and we extend our apologies to all those who were misled as a result of Jamestown Associates' action. The NRSC, the National Republican Senate Committee, will have no further dealings now or ever with Jamestown Associates, but they were our vendor, and we take responsibility. Wow. All right, then. White House senior advisor Valerie Jarrett, here on the other side of the political fence, apologized Thursday morning for referring to a gay teen who committed suicide as having made a lifestyle choice. Comments were made to an editorial writer of the Washington Post in an interview the previous day in which she discussed the recent spate of teen suicides linked to bullying because of sexual orientation. She praised the parents of the Minnesota teenager who killed himself for doing a good job supporting their son. But she said, quote, "These are good people. They were aware their son was gay. They embraced him. They loved him. They supported his lifestyle choice. But when he left home, went to school, he was tortured by his classmates." A blogger slammed Jarrett for the reference, lifestyle choice. In an email back, she said she misspoke. "I meant no disrespect to the LGBT community," she said, "and I apologize to any who've taken offense at my poor choice of words. Sexual orientation and gender identity are not a choice," she added. "Nor is suicide." New Yorker Juan J. Rodriguez has apologized for running naked in front of President Obama during last weekend's campaign stop in Philadelphia. Who knew they were still streakers? This has got to be the kid of a streaker, right? Streaker Jr.? Rodriguez was arrested for public lewdness after streaking 25 feet away from the president. "I just ripped off my clothes and I made my way away from the crowd so no one would get hurt," he said. "Ran past the cameras away from everybody and then knelt down with my hands behind my head and waited for the cops to come." Rodriguez, who is unemployed, said he pulled the stunt in hopes of claiming a $1 million reward offered by wealthy internet entrepreneur and self-professed prankster Alki David of Britain. David is now demanding confirmation from the White House that the president actually saw and heard the streaker. Rodriguez said he meant no disrespect to the president. "Mr. Obama, if you feel I disrespected you in any way, I'm very sorry for that," he said. "Where's my million?" Deadline Madrid, Israeli Foreign Minister Avigdor Lieberman apologized to his Spanish counterpart Miguel Ángel Moratinos for comments in which he advised Europe to solve its own problems. Actually, he was apologizing that the comments had been made public. Lieberman called Moratinos to discuss the comments he'd made to the Spaniard and the French foreign minister as they visited Israel over the weekend in a bid to rescue the Middle East peace processes. "Solve your own problems in Europe before you come to us with complaints. Maybe then I will be open to accepting your suggestions," the Israeli newspaper Haaretz quoted Lieberman as telling them. Lieberman said he didn't expect the European Union to solve all the world's problems, but expected it to at least take care of European issues like Kosovo and Cyprus. Lieberman apologized to Moratinos over the leaking of his comments made public by several media outlets. "Sorry, they said what I said." Actor Vince Vaughn has apologized for his comments in a theatrical trailer for his new film, The Dilemma, in which he calls electric cars gay. Earlier, NBC Universal executive Jeff Gaspin defended his network's position on tolerance. even as Universal was criticized for the so-called intolerant movie trailer. Universal sent a statement to The Hollywood Reporter announcing it was pulling that trailer for the movie, in which Vaughn calls electric cars gay. The trailer was criticized by the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, which said the clip presented a message of intolerance. CNN anchor Anderson Cooper also weighed in, saying he was shocked to hear such unacceptable language. Well, he's keeping them honest. Who's keeping him honest? Deadline United Kingdom, a hospital has issued apologies to the two pregnant women after wrongly telling them their unborn babies were dead. Two moms-to-be, Sophia Taylor and Joanna Barrow, were given the false news that their unborn babies were dead when they went for scans at Royal Sussex County Hospital. The managing authority apologized and offered assurance to other would-be mothers that they were implementing new safeguards to make sure the same error will not take place again. Ms. Taylor did not believe after the erroneous scan that her baby was dead at 9 weeks. She went for a second scan. It showed that her pregnancy was progressing normally. Barrow, who's 25, was also told in August 2007 that doctors could not find the fetal heartbeat. She came back for a follow-up scan a week later and found that there was, in fact, a heartbeat. So the unborn, at that time, babies were, in fact, undead. Former Columbia, North Carolina, City Councilman E.W. Cromarty apologized for not paying his taxes and for trying to hide his income from the IRS. Your Honor, regretfully, I have not exercised the diligence in my personal and financial affairs and my private life as I did in my public life, he tearfully told a federal judge. For the errors in my judgment, I am remorseful. I have truly disappointed my family, my friends, and my supporters. To all of these individuals, I offer my sincere, heartfelt apology. The prosecutor responded, "These aren't just errors in judgment, Your Honor. These are crimes." California gubernatorial candidate Jerry Brown and his opponent Meg Whitman this week clashed over an AIDS description of her, a Brown AIDS description of her, as a whore. Brown termed it part of an unfortunate part of a private conversation. Whitman called it a personal attack. It was the first public apology by Brown, the state's Democratic Attorney General, to Whitman, the former executive, chief executive of eBay, since the recording of the comment was made public last week. "Ms. Whitman, I'm sorry it happened," Brown said in their first and only debate. "That does not represent anything other than things..." Sorry, not only. Final debate. "That does not represent anything other than things that happen in a campaign." Asking Brown about the comment, the debate's moderator, Tom Brokaw, said the word to many women is the same as calling an African-American the N-word. Brown said he disagreed with the comparison, prompting groans from the audience. He said the campaign had apologized and added, "It's unfortunate. I'm sorry it happened, and I apologize." Whitman replied that voters deserve better than slurs and personal attacks. She told Brown, "Women know exactly what's going on here." Brown, speaking separately to reporters, he didn't think he'd lose female votes as a result of the comment. "Hey, they're just hoes anyway." What? No, nobody's... Is there a rapper in the room? I didn't... Tribune Company's Lee Abrams has quickly apologized for upsetting many of his fellow Tribune Company co-workers and embarrassing his company publicly. In an email sent out to company employees, he wrote, "I would like to take this apology to personally apologize to everyone who's offended by one of the videos in my think piece yesterday. It was poor judgment on my part, and I'm sorry." I'll depart from the quote for a moment to explain that Abrams has been sending out memos to inspire creativity at the Tribune Company. You've noticed the creativity that's resulted for the last 2 years, and this one included links to a video called Sluts. That's creative. Quoting Abrams again, "At the initial creative meeting for our new morning program, we showed 13 videos, some of which we liked, some of which we didn't like, to help demonstrate the concept for the program. Included were a few videos from The Onion, which used satire to call out the silliness of some TV shows. The video in bad taste was a parody of a cable-type reality show. It is not something we would ever air. We show this as an example of what not to do. But still, I understand it was very inappropriate to distribute a link to the video to a wider audience. I'm sorry for offending anyone, and I promise to make sure my future emails contain nothing like this video ever again. A promise that he needn't make, because 2 days later he resigned from Tribune Company. Bill O'Reilly, an old pro on the talk show circuit, brought up the mosque being planned near Ground Zero in Lower Manhattan on his visit to The View. He said 70% of Americans don't want that mosque down there, declared it inappropriate. Then you know what happened. Whoopi Goldberg and Joy Behar walked off the set. And Barbara Walters, who was remaining on the set, said that should not have happened, then told O'Reilly he needed to apologize. He finally said, quote, "All right, if anybody felt I was demeaning all Muslims, I apologize." If, Bill. The organizers of a Lancaster County, Pennsylvania parade apologized to the William Penn Senior High School marching band after members of the crowd threw rocks and insulted students during the event at the Mannheim Farm Show Parade last week. Orion?
Yes, that's the Mannheim Farm Show Parade. Many of the farmers in this area go there.
Okay. Two parade officials came to small athletic field and apologized to the band, who gathered along with several school and city officials on the 50-yard line. Tracy Zimmerman, chairwoman of the Farm Show Parade, says she was embarrassed by the community and the actions taken against their band. "I'm so sorry for what you guys experienced," she said. Seth Kensinger, he's vice president of the Farm Show, Harry. That's right. He apologized, too. "There are many good people in the community," he said, "but a few individuals ruined the evening." He said he hoped the band would return to the parade next year so they could be hosted properly. Kevin Cromer, director of William Penn Band, said it was the group's fourth year at the parade. The band had won a competition the previous year. Nothing similar had ever happened before. "It's something we never want our children to have to experience," he said, "but we're going to look at it as a learning opportunity." Well, better than a teachable moment. Speaking of educational institutions, another football apology. Defensive tackle Marvin Austin of the University of North Carolina, dismissed from the football team, apologized in a statement issued by his lawyer, Christopher Lyons. "I want to apologize to the NCAA and the entire North Carolina Tar Heel community. I've let you all down. I'm truly sorry. I deeply regret my actions and the embarrassment I brought to the university and to the football program." He violated NCAA agent benefits, preferential treatment, and ethical conduct rules. He received money ranging in the $10,000 to $13,000 range. Here's a little piece of advice to those of you thinking of selling out. Hold out for more than chump change if you're going to screw up your career. This is whether you're a football player or member of the New Orleans City Council. Just don't do it for chump change. The Chinese Basketball Association apologized this week for a brawl that forced play to be suspended in an exhibition game against Brazil a day earlier. China's players were angry over a foul call in which coach Bob Donawald, a former NBA assistant with the Hornets and Cavaliers, loudly protested to the referee. Play became increasingly rough until breaking out into open exchanges of kicks and punches, with players from both benches charging onto the court. China players then attacked their opponents as the Brazilians were heading to the locker room. The Brazilians, refused to return to the court or play the fourth game in their series. At least one Chinese player was seen wearing a neck brace. The Chinese Basketball Association apologizes to the Brazilian side and all other parties over the incident, which created such serious consequences, said CBA Association Vice Chairman Li Jincheng. The entire team had been ordered to attend classes on good sportsmanship. "This is just the latest instance of on-court fighting by the Chinese team, which has been fined tens of thousands of dollars by the world and Asian federations." So watch out for the Chinese. Even their basketball players are getting aggressive. Although star players Yao Ming and Yi Jingyan, they're both in the NBA, weren't present at the game. Explains a lot about. Some 6 weeks after he was hired to be the new chief executive of news aggregation website Dig.com, Matt Williams greeted community members for the first time this week, apologizing for the site's botched attempt at a redesign and announcing officially that several old features would be returning. I know, like we care. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
I'm fixing a hole where the rain gets in and stops my mind from wondering where it will go. I'm filling the cracks that ran through the door and kept my mind from wondering where it will go. And it really doesn't matter if I'm wrong, I'm right. Where I belong, I'm right. Where I belong. Well, silly people, they're standing there, they disagree, they never will. I'm painting my room in a colorful way, and when my mind is wandering, there it will go.
Down Chile way.
And there's gold in that there hole.
Got to be inside extra access tonight for the middle of October 2010.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mike DeVere.
And I'm Pat Mungo. Back on my meds.
This week, the good news story of the year belonged to the news channels as 33 Chilean miners were rescued on live TV and got ratings worthy, if not of the Super Bowl, maybe of the Oscar red carpet pre-show. That's gold. And if there's one thing Hollywood knows, it's how to manufacture more of that.
Producers from here to Amsterdam have been burning the midnight oil, designing the shows that can keep that feel-good feeling, or something like it, burning bright during the dark winter months ahead. Here's an exclusive IEAT sampling of what's in store.
Sure, we saw the miners when they emerged from their capsule, but who did we focus on during the long hours of waiting? The Miners' Wives.
Canada Jacoby is producing a show for the Nitrogen Channel called Miners' Wives.
I mean, yes, on the one hand, we do send the wives down to the room or the area or space, whatever it is, where these men were trapped for 2 months, and they're living there together. A couple differences. One, we bring a team of designers from our sister show, Does This Room Make Me Look Fat?, to totally make over that space. So, no, it's not the Ritz, and they're still stuck down there. But at least it's got some pizzazz. Horrible word, I hate it, but that's what it is. Since we know there's a video feed down there, half our work is already done for us. We'll see how these women cope. Who's the villainess? Who's the heroine? Who bonds with who? You know, all the classic themes. Then the viewers vote their favorite woman each week out of the hole. She comes up in the capsule, and there's her husband to greet her, and maybe the president of Chile, if we can come up with the right number. And yes, it's a total flip of the old reality formula. The sooner you get voted out, the better. We just think that's magic.
We know how well these miners cooperated with each other when it meant saving their lives. What I think everybody wants to know is how well they can compete against each other to win really big money.
Zach Riefenstahl is director of programming for TAC, formerly the Arts Channel.
The story of the show is that it's a great big money competition built around the capsule. I mean, we know how much anxiety these guys felt in that thing. Now, put 33 of them on a huge stage with lights and music, a very jacked up studio audience. The guys are sealed in their capsules, no air conditioning. Maybe week three, there's even mold on the walls or something. And each guy has to tell us a secret about one of the others. I mean, that's what we got so far. Just that much has got the reps of the guys very interested. Whoever stays in his capsule longest gets $1 million, and the rest of them get Buicks or something.
The capsule is tentatively penciled in on the TAC schedule for January, or as soon as they can get the capsules built.
Well, of course, the minute we knew these men would survive, the question became, how do they readjust to life above ground?
Pearson McGrath runs the new cable channel CBC America. His project is called Fitting In.
Our notion is to take them all to a resort, very picturesque, subject them all to a set of challenges, just to find the five whom we want to follow back home on the whole fitting in angle. So you get the great beach resort look, which we can flash back to whenever we need a bit of splash. And then we get our five hero guys. Of course, they're all heroes, but I mean in the TV sense. And we follow them for 2 months. We're in their homes, their therapy sessions, their nights out with other guys. If things are going too easily, we might throw them a curveball, you know, have a mine official deny them their compensation payment or something, just to test their new coping skills. And of course we have psychologists on staff, so this really does have the flavor of a real experiment. But there's always the great beach footage.
Fitting In will try fitting into CBC America's spring schedule, which also includes Growing Up Mulrooney.
We had some minor difficulties, but that's inside extra access tonight. For tonight.
Tomorrow, we come rolling back with the results of our latest IEAT Twitter poll.
We asked you who your favorite new American Idol judge is.
And the answer will have you asking for a jury trial.
Till then, I'm Mike DeVere.
And I'm Pat Mungo. So long from Culver City.
I was told, try to be just as good as gold. Fly right, child, and walk that line. Keep it straight and you'll be just fine. Well, you don't have to worry about a thing I'll do, but you're the kind of trouble that I could get into. People say you can't be tamed,
You're in the Heartbreakers Hall of Fame. Got them all standing in line. Yeah, I can read your warning sign. It's a danger zone that I'm traveling through. You're the kind of trouble that I could get into. You're the kind of trouble that's hard to resist. I hate to think about all the fun I've missed. I heard the rumors and I hope they're true. 'Cause you're the kind of trouble I could get into. Don't drink much, never smoke. Ain't too many rules that I broke. Keep to myself, lead a real quiet life. Don't stay out late at night. They say I ain't a wild one, but if they only knew. You're the kind of trouble that I could get into. You're the kind of trouble that I could get into. You're the kind of trouble that I could get into.
This is Le Show from Idlewild, California. Now,
he's not a general. He commands no troops. He's not an inspector. He peeks at no stoops. He's an inspector general.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
The Environmental Protection Agency's Inspector General reported this week that the EPA had improperly used its official website to promote ways of recycling the waste that, you know, is left over when power plants burn coal, commonly known as coal ash. You know about coal ash, don't you? The Inspector General report says the website didn't tell the public the EPA had decided that coal ash no longer should be dumped in empty pits, and that it had concerns about the safety of other uses of the material, such as fertilizer and road fill. The waste contains, you know, arsenic and other metals that can cause cancer and damage the nervous system in people who drink contaminated water. Well, why would you do that? Folks, knock off the contaminated water, okay? And it can kill fish and other aquatic life. Okay, same to the fish. Knock off the contaminated water. The Inspector General's report, also for our fish listeners, the Inspector General's report says the EPA should have mentioned on the website it had found 7 cases of large-scale dumping of coal ash that had caused damage to health and the environment. All right, then. The FAA cannot effectively detect or stop cyber attacks against air traffic control systems, according to the Transportation Department's Inspector General. The IG says the FAA has yet to fully implement an intrusion detection system at all air traffic control facilities. Without those capabilities, FAA cannot effectively monitor ATC systems for possible cyber attacks or take action to stop them. Thank goodness nobody's trying to do that. You know, no hackers are working on that stuff. Specifically, of the 11 automated radar terminal system computer systems that should have the intrusion detection system installed on them. You got enough systems yet in your system? Only 7 do. The FAA has told auditors they're delaying implementation of the cybersecurity system until next January in order to first perform critical software upgrades. Have you agreed to the terms of use, FAA? If not, you're screwed. The FAA also lacks a timetable for deploying the intrusion detection systems at other air control facilities. So says the Transportation Department's Inspector General. A team from the Department of Defense Inspector General spent time at Camp Lejeune's Wounded Warrior Battalion East Center for a survey of best practices in caring for wounded, ill, and injured troops. And while officers with the battalion said conditions are better than ever for recovering Marines, some say the unit desperately needs an overhaul. They're there to see how the Marine Corps cares for its wounded, ill, and injured Marines, said an official. They're there basically to ask what we do and how we do it. The visit included one-on-one interviews with every major staff member and many of the Marines themselves. The man who represents Camp Lejeune in Congress, Representative Walter Jones, said he has heard a number of troubling reports from families with troops in the unit. One woman who has appealed to Jones, Beth Pennington of Lexington, Kentucky, said that during the time her son spent on the Wounded Warrior Barracks, battling post-traumatic stress disorder and severe depression, his condition worsened due to over-medication and bad care. Jones told the Daily News of that area, I guess, not the LA Daily News, he's looking to get to the bottom of issues that seem to be caused by an overloaded system. I've said this in committee, that the concept of the Wounded Warrior Program is excellent. I don't think anyone ever thought that 9 years later we'd still be at war. As programs that were intended to be in the short term become long term, I think you tend to see more issues come out, unquote. Congressman Jones. Even after the New Orleans Inspector General found that the city's malfunctioning crime cameras were a colossal waste of money March of last year and new contractors were hired to run the program, former Mayor Nagin's administration continued to pay for non-existent and poorly performing equipment. That's from the report this week by New Orleans Inspector General Ed Quatrevaux, following up on the 2009 report that found $4 million had been wasted on possible self-dealing at City Hall. That also can make you blind. That helped to launch a criminal probe and led to the indictment of former Nagin Technology Chief Greg Meffert and the contractor who sold the city crime cameras, Mark St. Pierre. A police detective told Inspector General investigators that on one day, only 41 of 211 cameras, fewer than one in five, worked. The city paid nearly $190,000 for equipment it never received and another $200,000 that didn't go through proper approvals. When the city questioned another payment for a similar amount, The supplier demanded payment, never acknowledged that it had already supposedly given the city a credit. Phone numbers that worked at one time for the vendor's Chicago offices did not function this week, according to the New Orleans Times-Picayune. The system was designed to fail, and it did, said Inspector General Quatrevaux. Well, something worked as designed under the administration of Mayor Nagin. Champagne's on me. News of the Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Well, isn't it a pity what you don't know? When you're young, and isn't it a pity how we're strong and too high strung? Funny when you're old enough and wise enough, you laugh at stuff that used to make you cry. Cause everybody holds on to someone who'll do for fear of being lonely. So throw him over, Juliet. Cause he's a loser, he's a loser. He's no Romeo. And I know how long you've waited, but you have to let him go, darling, before he turns you cold. Now I'm not the voice of reason. I just own all the things I've done. And I hate to see you suffer, but it's a lesson that must be won. I know that you're not ready to enjoy the view, 'cause you compromise yourself in this way. But everybody has a choice and has a voice, and it's better to be lonely sometimes. So throw him over, Juliet, 'cause he's a loser, he's a loser, he's no Romeo. And I know how long you waited, but you have to let him go, darling, before he turns you cold.
Ladies and gentlemen, I asked last week again for people who listen to this program on so-called HD radio. How's that HD waffle iron working out for you? To check in. Let us know. Give a shout-out from the HD nation. Ugh, don't call anything a nation anymore unless it's got a flag and a UN ambassador, please. Thank you. From Will. Hi, I noted you asked in last week's show if anybody was listening via HD radio. Wanted to tell you I listen here in St. Louis, Missouri on KWMU HD2 at noon on Sundays. Hey, that's live. Unfortunately, the problem with the shortwave airing I used to listen to, WBCQ, is that it's opposite other programming and other media. But as a shortwave listener for many decades, I do appreciate you acknowledge that audience, too. All right, so there's one. There's one. News of Alpha. Ladies and gentlemen, Pakistan, our friend, has been secretly accelerating the pace of its nuclear weapons program, assembling 70 to 90 nuclear warheads. India has 60 to 80. This according to the Institute of Science and International Security, which has obtained satellite images showing that a row of cooling towers at Pakistan's secret Kushab 3 reactor has been completed. This is according to the British newspaper The Daily Telegraph, suggesting the plant could begin operation within months, allowing Pakistan to increase substantially its stockpiles of weapons-grade plutonium. Guess what country is right next door to Pakistan? No. 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 That's right, Iran. Work at Kushab 3 has forged ahead even as Pakistan struggles to cope with floods. Pakistan argues its nuclear program is necessary to counter the superior conventional forces of India. The U.S. is also disturbed by Chinese plans to build two new nuclear reactors in Pakistan, bypassing rules that bar sales of nuclear equipment to states like Pakistan and India and Israel that have not signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. More news of clean, cheap, safe to meter. A lead engineer at the $12.3 billion waste treatment and immobilization plant at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, they're not just going to treat it, they're going to immobilize the waste, ladies and gentlemen, says the Department of Energy, along with the lead contractor Bechtel, cannot assure the public that the plant will work properly and safely when it's completed a decade from now, despite public statements to the contrary, and $5 billion spent so far. At risk are just the Columbia River and the health and safety of people in southeast Washington state. Dr. Walter Tomositis was research and technology manager and deputy chief processing engineer for a subcontractor to Bechtel. Since 2003, he oversaw a half a billion dollar budget covering some of the waste treatment plant's most crucial design functions. On July 2, he was escorted out of the building like an absolute felon, he said, stripped of his position after raising a series of safety and operational concerns. The management, in my opinion, did not want to hear that, and the easiest thing to do to move ahead is to eliminate what's a potential roadblock, i.e. him. The day he was before he was dismissed, Tomositis and a team of fellow engineers presented about 50 unresolved technical issues in a meeting with the Bechtel managers. The list included some of the 100 yet unresolved operational safety issues he and others had identified the year before. Some Bechtel managers tried to downplay the issues, he said. Others in the room said they do exist and would not let the issue or issues be swept under the carpet. Now, Tomositis, who has a master's and PhD in systems engineering, performs menial tasks among the copy machines in the basement. Some at the plant fear retaliation if they continue to raise concerns, he said. I've heard people tell me that if they'll do this to you, it scares me what they would do to me, Tomositis says. In response to the incident, DOE Office of Health, Safety and Security interviewed workers at Bechtel and its subcontractors about its nuclear safety culture. Their conclusions came in a report released August 6th. Most personnel who were interviewed said they were comfortable with raising safety concerns. However, some individuals believe there is a chilled environment that discourages reporting of safety concerns and are concerned about retaliation. The waste treatment plant at Hanford, an enormous Superfund site, is expected to process up to 53 million gallons of high-grade radioactive and hazardous waste currently stored underground. That's from decades of building nuclear weapons. A third of the underground tanks storing waste today have leaked, threatening to send a radioactive plume of groundwater toward the Columbia River. The goal of the waste treatment plant is to turn that hazardous waste into a stable glass form. Vitrification would be the method, by 2040. The cost has already ballooned from Bechtel's original estimate of $5 billion 7 years ago to $12.3 billion today, with rumors of it going even higher. The timeline for completion, originally 7 years, has now been extended to 20. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, Bechtel is continuing construction and downplaying unresolved design issues that could jeopardize the whole project. A primary concern raised by Tomositis and others involves the pre-treatment mixing of the radioactive and hazardous waste before being separated into high- and low-grade batches. The material will get mixed within tanks by jets of air. If the tanks don't mix well, he said, you could have an uncontrolled nuclear reaction similar to an atomic bomb. The probability of a criticality occurring is low, he said, but that event, whether you could have it or not, how close you are to having one or not having one, is being debated. And I would offer, in a $12 billion plant, the mixing should be made more robust, more vigorous, such that that item is not debated. The major concern is the plant might not work properly or take longer to build, further threatening the Columbia River, wasting valuable financial resources and prolonging one of the nation's most enduring environmental cleanups. Kind of a tradition now. Deadline Washington, a former member of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, is calling for an investigation of Chairman Gregory Jaczko's handling of the Yucca Mountain Nuclear Waste Project. Kenneth Rogers alleges that Jaczko acted apart from the other four commissioners in directing agency scientists to halt a review of the nuclear waste plan. He questioned whether the agency's reputation for independence is being compromised. More. Yes, there's more. The Entergy nuclear plant officials have notified the Vermont Department of Health about a positive tritium sample from a new well, the construction building well once used for drinking water, decommissioned March of this year. The positive sample measured a tritium concentration below the allowable limit for drinking water. In January, the Vermont Yankee Power Station notified the Vermont Department of Health that samples collected in November from a ground monitoring well on the site contained tritium, signaling an unintended release of radioactive material. The testing being conducted at the construction well is part of an ongoing investigative monitoring and corrective actions program being conducted in response to those leaks. Energy has filed with the NRC for a 20-year license renewal for Vermont Yankee, still awaiting when Vermont senators voted 26-4 winter, the last, against the request. Vermont's the only state to have a law that requires approval from the legislature. More, another nuclear plant in Illinois, the Zion Nuclear Power Station, has been closed down. Exelon calls it the largest nuclear plant dismantling ever undertaken in the United States. Many in the town are still asking the same question they asked when the company shut off the power in 1998. Why are they shutting down the plant? Exelon officials have told the Chicago Tribune in the past they considered restarting Zion on several occasions but decided it wasn't economically feasible. The 10-year dismantling project will require an average of 200 employees a year. It will cost $1 billion to dismantle. Clean, cheap, safe. Dateline Plymouth, Mass., the owners of the Pilgrim nuclear plant say levels of the radioactive isotope tritium, there's that tritium again, in monitoring wells near the Plymouth facility have risen above federal drinking water standards. A spokesman for Entergy, running that plant as well, tells the local newspaper, the Patriot Ledger, that tritium levels are not a threat to the public drinking water supply. Who are you going to believe? Entergy or and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in has stated that the leak of tritium at the Vermont Yankee nuclear plant in Vermont is a nearly four-decade-old problem. According to the inspection report released this week, the failure to satisfy early construction and housekeeping standards during the 1970s, as well as the lack of corporate emphasis and commitment to the timely implementation of a buried piping inspection program, are what ultimately resulted in the tritium contamination these past 2 years. So, of course, you trust them. Wouldn't you? Clean, cheap, safe, 2 tritium to meter. Your friend, the Atom. Goodbye, Addy.
Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's Mile High edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world by the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet. A shout out to our shortwave listeners. Around the world via the internet on your computer, live and archive, 2 different locations, harryshearer.com or kcow.com. On the Mighty 104 in Berlin, on your phone via Stitcher.com. It's a smartphone. It has to be that. You see what I'm saying? And as a free podcast at KCRW.com. And it'd be just like having some tritium in our drinking water, if you'd agree joyfully then. Would you? Alrighty. Thank you very much. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, in exile, and Hawaii desks. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music heard hereon available at harryshearer.com. Information about the Big Uneasy available at thebiguneasy.com. The show is on Twitter at The Harry Shearer. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW of Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from Idlewild.